Well, actually, it's a gas.
I never even heard this song before. That's a great.
You don't know Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine? It's
of
a gas.
I know Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I got Mad Magazine all the time. When I was
well,
up.
You know, we're going to get all over the place, but we're going to do this for at least an hour. Okay, so he is Craig Gass, and I'm John Landecker, and this is 720 WGN, and there that's all you need to know for now. So we were talking about Howard Stern, right, off the air.
Yeah.
You work for Howard Stern.
Yep. I work for him now. I'm back with him now.
And you know, I was explaining to you what I thought what made his movie Private Parts the greatest thing, and then we mentioned Mad Magazine. You read it. I read it. And there's a scene in the... In Private Parts, where he's on the couch, he's reading it.
Oh, yeah.
And the wife goes, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "Oh, show prep."
Yeah. he has framed copies of Mad Magazine.
No.
He's talked very, he's talked a lot about his love of Mad Magazine and how great it was and how what he wanted to do with radio was essentially be a lampoon of society like Mad Magazine for the radio.
Totally.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, I'm a stand-up comedian who's known for voices. I've always been able to do any voice that I hear because of how I grew up. And
That story, yeah.
This is not a joke.
No.
This is a true story. Everyone in my family is deaf. My mom, my dad, and my sister are all completely deaf. So growing up in a deaf family, I couldn't learn how to talk for my family. I learned how to talk by watching TV and copying all the voices I heard on TV. And I never got an accent. I grew up in the Bronx, and everybody in the Bronx sounds like Tracy Morgan, the comedian. Everybody in the Bronx talk like this, whether you black or white, male or female. That's crazy. Hey, this is the voice of your next door neighbor, and I'm a Vietnamese girl. That's crazy. Like, everybody sounded like that. So growing up, I just had this knack for picking up voices. The weirder the voice, the easier it is for me to do it. Like Christopher Walken has a real stop and go kind of voice where he'll talk every once in a while. He'll stop and then he'll keep going. Or Adam Sandler, Shibidoo hee-hoo. So when I started getting into radio, man, it just caught on, and radio guys everywhere wanted to.
Oh, I can only imagine
shows, and then they wouldn't pay me, and
I can imagine. Oh, that I truly believe.
Yeah. I have to say quickly though, because and this isn't going to help me at all in selling tickets for a comedy show that I'm doing this weekend, because it's not a funny story, but God, it's one of my favorite stories about George Carlin. You were talking about George before I came in, and George was my mentor. He was a father figure to me. This is kind of creepy, but I saved all of my answering machine tapes with George's messages on them.
I don't find that creepy at all.
I don't think it was his intention that I should keep these, but he was just so funny on my answering machine tapes. I was like, oh man, I saved all these tapes. And, he taught me so much as a kid about how to be funny. Like, I really learned, like, my friends and I, all like, we started using the phone the way that George would cup the microphone for effect. And we go, well, maybe you're a moron. Like, we would do that on the phone. Like, we learned how to, like, have an extra effect. But he taught me so much about how to be a good human being as an adult. He always remembered all my friends' names. I would always bring a different group of comedians to every show. And a true testament to what kind of a human being George was is he was married to this woman, Brenda, for, I think, 40 years. Brenda was diagnosed with breast cancer and died 3 weeks later on Mother's Day. I was trying to connect with George to find out, hey, are you okay? Are you doing all right? And he was just, yeah, I'm really busy. So, I hear what you're saying. I got to do the Tonight Show, and I'll call you later. And I checked in with Dennis Blair, who was his opening act. And Dennis was the one who introduced me to George. And I said, is George okay? And he said, yeah, he's doing all right. You know, I mean, last week when it all happened, we went to his house, my wife and I, and George came out of his room and said, listen, I really appreciate you guys coming over, but I've been up for 3 days. I got to go to sleep. So please, I'll call you later. And he said, George turned around and he started walking down the hallway. And my wife and I both saw this. Brenda liked to collect stuffed animals over the years. The house was filled with stuffed animals she had picked up from around the world. And Dennis said when George Carlin opened the door to his bedroom, Dennis and his wife could see that George had taken all of Brenda's stuffed animals and he had put them all in the bed and he was sleeping with Brenda's stuffed animals. This might actually make me lose ticket sales this weekend.
Oh, I don't think so. No, not at all.
But I learned so much from him about how to be a good human being, and that was a really important lesson to learn. But I'm in town. I'm doing shows in Bolingbroke at a brand new comedy club called CG's Comedy Club in Bolingbroke, and it's cgscomedyclub.com, cgscomedyclub.com, and man, have I got some stories for you. I doing impressions has led to everyone I do an impression of has tried to meet me, or sometimes I've met other people by doing like prank call impressions to them, and then we become friendly. Like Tom Arnold years ago. I started doing stand-up in Seattle, and a buddy of mine who worked at this hotel said, oh man, all these stars are staying at my hotel, they're here for the grand opening of Planet Hollywood. And he said, Sylvester Stallone is there, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Arnold. And I said, Tom Arnold is at your hotel? And he goes, yeah, Tom Arnold's at my hotel. That night I go home and I open up the phone book, I call up the Seattle Hilton, and I said, hi, Tom Arnold please. And they said, just one moment. And they put me through. Tom Arnold picks up the phone and he goes, hello. And I said, Tom, it's Sam Kinison. Sam Kinison had been dead for 7 years. And Tom Arnold goes, hey, buddy, how you been? Good to talk to you, buddy. And I said, I go, Tom, I need some help. I'm in the afterlife and I need some help. Whatever you need, buddy, I'm here to help you, man. What do you need me to do for you? And I said, well, what I need you to do is I need you to get me some cocaine. All right. This is what I need you to do. I need you to purchase some cocaine. And I want you, and this is where it gets tricky. First of all, I need you to front me the cash because I don't have any cash. Buy me the cocaine. Then I want you to get on a plane. I want you to fly back to Los Angeles. And I want you to drive to Jerry Lewis's house. And then when you get to his house, I want you to take the cocaine. I want you to put it in the small pocket of his pants. And I'll have it when he gets here in 3 weeks. Oh!
Did he ever straighten it out in his own head?
No, I stopped and said, I'm sorry, Tom. My name's Craig Gass.
But he went with it.
I go, man, he totally went with it. And I said, Tom, I'm a comedian and I'm a huge fan of yours. And he said, man, that impression is so good that I need to call my sponsor right now. That's how good it is.
Because it's too bad because I have the cocaine here now, which is not good for either of us. We're doing more when we come back on 720 WGN.
Oh!
720 WGN. I'm John Landecker along with Craig Gass, who works with Howard Stern. And that's a clip from the Stern movie Private Parts, where they're going over the ratings, and people who dislike Howard Stern actually listen to him longer and more often than the people who do like Howard Stern.
Yeah.
Which is there's some sort of social commentary then there. You know, can you back up a bit and talk some more about, I mean, I'm sitting here watching you do these impersonations which are spot on, but they're instantaneous. There's no shifting of the eye. There's no body language change. There's no, it's just like on automatic pilot. I mean, you just say the name and the voice comes out without any adjustment, I guess, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And you said that with your parents being deaf, I mean, this really sort of fascinates me, that it somehow obviously affected your ability to do many things, I would assume, but learning how to speak and then how that translates into being able to impersonate voices is something that really intrigues me. What do you think the link between all that is, if there is one?
I had nobody to learn how to talk from. Nobody was talking in the house. Everybody was signing. But I would watch TV, and I would mimic what I was hearing on the TV.
Yeah.
And early on, I started mimicking people whose voices stood out, like Howard Cosell or Muhammad Ali or Arthur Fonzarelli. And I just always had this knack for picking up voices, and I was very isolated. And it led to, you know, then I'm in high school and getting mischievous, and mm-hmm. friends of mine would say, I go to parties, people go, "Hey, Craig, if we give you some cocaine, will you..."
I'll be back to that again.
"Will you do some impressions for us?" And I go, "Yeah." And then I ended up getting really good at impressions, and then developed a really bad cocaine problem that I had to work through. And then starting doing stand-up, I just radio just was an easy fit. But I always had that ability. And when... It's funny because I would do, when you say about doing the impressions, I just go right into it. There's no hesitation.
Right.
I would do impressions for my family that involved no voices. It would just be the body language of people. And I'd say, "Here's grandpa looking out the window." And I would instantly understand someone's body language. So when I do an impression of somebody, I think of their body language before I do anything. So like...
But you don't... assume any of their body language. Physically.
Like Adam Sandler.
What you just did.
And he can be very shifty, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And he's very nervous. And then Al Pacino will just look right through you, my friend. "I'm asking you, why am I looking right through your soul? Who?" Like... You know, I always think of the body language of the person before I start doing the voice, and then the voice just seems to come with it easily.
Well, you know, people who do impressions, at least my experience of them in the past, and there have been some great ones like Frank Gorshin and Rich Little, and mm-hmm. I mean, those are people from way back in the day, but specifically, I have a memory of Gorshin being on something like the Ed Sullivan Show. And saying he's going to do Burt Lancaster.
And then he'd turn around.
And then he'd turn around and come back, and his face would be contorted.
Yeah.
And his whole body language would be different, but you don't do any of that.
Yeah. No.
But there's something else going on there besides, you know, the parental thing. I mean, you have an innate ability for this that is something from birth that just you have.
Yeah.
Because I don't got it. I'd love to have it, but I don't have it. You know what I'm saying?
That's what the whole show is. It's if you come out in Bolingbrook, we're doing it's the whole show is impressions, stories about people who I do impressions of, who've mm-hmm. tried to meet me mm-hmm. over the years, awkward exchanges that I've had with people. I had dinner with Christopher Walken, and he hated me.
Really? Why?
Because another comedian who should have known better. And I love him, and I miss him. He passed away a year ago, Richard Belzer.
Oh yeah, sure. Richard Belzer.
Richard was at that table. We're gonna do a Friars Club roast of Richard Belzer.
Right.
This is 2001, and Richard is so nice to me. He wants me to sit at his table for dinner before the show, and it's this big formal dinner in this ballroom, and there's a prepared meal at every seat, and Richard goes, "Come sit with me," and I sit down, and he looks up and goes, "Chris. Chris, get over here. Chris, you know Craig Gass? Here, sit between me and Craig Gass." I look up. It's Christopher Walken. And Christopher Walken sits down and clearly has the body language of someone who's not in a good mood. He's very closed off. He's looking down at his food. And Belzer's in his face talking to him. And I'm noticing that he looks really irritated. And then all of a sudden, Richard goes, "All right, listen, Chris. I know a lot of people do an impression of you, mm-hmm. but you gotta hear this guy." And I went, "Oh no, Richard, he doesn't want to hear that." And he goes, no, it's fine, Chris, will you look at me? Will you look at me? Okay, now look at Craig. All right, watch this. Do the impression. Christopher Walken throws his utensils on the table and went, "Go ahead." And I just looked back at him.
Did you do it?
I went, "You know, I don't know."
if this sounds like you or not. But what I try to do is I try to sound as weird as possible. And every once in a while, I say the word cowbell, pow, and Walken went, wow. And then he went back to his food.
But what makes you think he didn't like you?
Because he just went right back to his food. Well, he said, wow, like very sarcastically.
Yeah, okay. Wow. Well, you know, how many people do Christopher Walken or think they do Christopher Walken?
But Belzer keeps going. And he goes, hold on. You ever heard anybody do?
So he wanted you to go through your whole repertoire?
He goes, do you know who Tracy Moore? Do Adam Sandler. He's got me doing Sam. I'm screaming at this poor guy.
Sam Kinison.
As Sam Kinison. The Belzer going, I'm sorry, but I don't know if you remember this guy. This guy used to do something. And Walken in the middle of the Sam Kinison said, listen, I get it.
I can't stand this.
You're talented. Good for you. And I was like, I'm not pushing this issue. He is. Oh, yeah. That's a censored version of that story,
by the way. Yeah, I bet there are many censored items that will be on the air between now and 8:30.
Yeah.
Our in-studio guest is Craig Gass, who is, amongst other things, as you can tell, a very talented impressionist, also a comedian, a writer with an unbelievable resume and a fascinating personal history. And the idea to me when I heard you were coming on, I said, he writes for Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. And I went, wait a minute. Howard Stern has writers?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, now that's something I want to hear about. Which we will. We don't have time to get into it now.
But and I also want to mention the shows this weekend. Three of them are selling out. We're doing five shows, but three of them are selling out. And all the info is at cgscomedyclub.com. It's CGS Comedy Club.
And this is a new place,
you said. A new place in Bolingbrook. Yeah, and a really nice shopping center. And CG's Comedy. It sounds like I should own it. Craig Gass. CG's.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, yeah. But CG's Comedy Club. CGScomedyClub.com out in Bolingbrook. And the shows are, you definitely want to get them early to make sure you can get in. And Howard has had writers Fred and Jackie.
I got to break a break. We'll talk more about it when we come back after the news. But right now, it's time to get into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN.
I love
720 WGN. I'm John Landecker, and this has turned into a personal show for me. I just hope everybody enjoys listening to it because I'm into all that's going on. So in the studio with me now, in case you're just joining, is Craig Gass, who's a comedian, does impressions, has an unbelievable backstory, has great tales to tell, and will be doing that at CG's Comedy Club Friday and Saturday. Two shows Friday, three shows Saturday. This is in Bolingbrook. CG'sComedyClub.com. Get tickets. Believe me, you won't believe it. So, in the news break, I don't know how we got to the topic of the gentleman we just... Could you explain who we just played on the air there?
So, John, I've had two famous roommates in my life. One of them is Mitch Hedberg, and the other is Eddie Van Halen.
Wow.
Eddie Van Halen, I slept in a recording studio that was on his property. He has this big property. It has a mansion, the original house he got with Valerie Bertinelli, recording studio on the guest house. But Mitch was my first roommate in New York.
Well, the thing is, I didn't even know who Mitch was. And I was telling my producer about, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, I'm scrolling up and down TikTok, and he comes on, and I am just blown away by this guy. I had never, not even, I'm sorry to say, had never even heard of him. And I took clips and played him on the air. And the guy was a genius, I thought.
It's crazy to me how many people will come up to me and say, oh, you know who I love is Mitch Hedberg. And they don't even know he's gone.
Yeah.
And Mitch, such a beautiful person. The first night I ever met Mitch was in Seattle at this club that I used to work at. He comes in as a headliner, and he had a lot of... Some guys would come in with reputations. You'd hear like, oh, man, this guy, Patton Oswalt, man, this is the guy. You got to watch this guy when he gets into town. Doug Stanhope, you got to watch him when he comes in. Mitch Hedberg. And I heard so many things about Mitch and how great he was that I campaigned to be his opener. I got the gig, and I met him before the show. I said, hey, Mitch, I'm Craig Gass. I'm your opener. And he's like, oh, right on. Cool, man. We're going to have some fun. And then I go up and I do my high energy thing, which is all big high energy, which is not a match for Mitch. And then I go, all right, please welcome Mitch Hedberg. And then Mitch gets on stage and he goes, all right. Hey, where's Thomas? And the whole room just got really quiet. Like, what? And you hear a guy in the back of the room and he goes, I'm back here, man. I can't, there's no seats because the show was sold out. And he goes, hey, can somebody make room for my friend Thomas? Oh, you know what? To hell with it. Thomas, there's a stool on stage. Come up to the stage. You can sit on stage with me. And then all of a sudden from the back of the room, you hear, excuse me. And this guy, and the whole room is going, what the hell's going on? And this guy walks up on stage, turns around. Nobody knows who this guy Thomas is. But right. As soon as he turned around, everyone started laughing because it was very obvious this man was incredibly high. And he looked very uncomfortable with the lights on him.
Oh, I bet.
He didn't realize how bright the lights were going to be.
Yeah.
And he tried to put his hand up to block the spotlight, and I remember he had a leather jacket on that had a homemade pin. He didn't buy the actual pin. He typed the word Motorhead and made a pin out of it and put it on his jacket. And Mitch goes, all right, well, my name's Mitch and these are my jokes.
Yes.
And he starts right. going into his jokes, and something crazy happens. His first back then, when he wasn't well known yet,
yeah,
audiences sometimes he would bomb really hard.
Oh, I can imagine.
Because people would not go,
they like, what is this?
What is it? Yeah. I don't understand. It's so unusual.
Right.
But most of the time, it would take them a few minutes, mm-hmm, and they would get into his wheelhouse, and then he would take off. And his first joke, the crowd, there's a beat, and the crowd starts laughing. Mitch starts going into his next joke. When Thomas just put the last joke together and starts laughing, which makes Mitch go, ha ha, hell yeah. And then Mitch starts laughing, which makes the whole crowd start laughing again, which makes Mitch and Thomas start laughing again. And that became the rhythm of the night. Every joke he made, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 waves of laughter
right
after every joke. And he did in 45 minutes what probably was a 15-20 minute set, because there was so much laughter in the air.
I have to say, if you don't know who we're talking about, you should really find out. Mitch Hedberg, as I said earlier, I did not know him until I was like, you know, scrolling, you know, TikTok.
Well, good
news. He's like, to me, he's George Carlin, only 1 degree either left, right, up, or down. I'm not quite sure, but it's the same
genius
and ways of looking things and turning them around that you and that most people don't notice. Like X, for instance, you know, it's that same way of looking at things. It's
He gets compared to Stephen Wright a lot.
Yes. Oh, I've had Stephen Wright on. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that
absurd comedy.
Yeah.
Well, good news. Netflix is
nonlinear thinking, I think, would be one way of putting it.
Sure. Netflix is doing a documentary about Mitch. I'm being interviewed for
when?
It. They're interviewing people now that are close to him. And I think it's going to be out later this year. But I'm sitting down for my interview next month in New York. And yeah, Mitch became my first roommate. And I remember the first day that I moved in with him, he was going to leave me alone in the apartment for the whole weekend because he had a gig in the Poconos. He was going to be gone for the weekend. And I'm trying to get my bearings straight at this apartment in Lower Manhattan. It's right outside the Hudson tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's showing me where, he's like, all right, this key goes to this key goes to this. And at some point he walks up to the front door and there's this map of the New York City subway on the back of the front door, and he goes, oh, hey, Craig, this is a map of a New York City subway. And the first time you look at it, it's a little confusing. It's blue, yellow, red lines going in every direction. And I'm staring at it for a second when he goes, so that's how that works.
We'll be back with more on 720 WGN. More Mitch, more often. Here at 720 WGN, John Landecker, 20 minutes after 8 o'clock with Craig Gass in the studio, and I turn it back over to you, Craig.
I just want to tell you quickly, there was one night I was with Mitch. The first night I moved back out to New York to move in with Mitch, we hit a bunch of comedy clubs, and he did this joke at Stand Up New York, and for some reason it just crushed. Like, this one joke that usually gets a decent response just brought the house down, and Mitch backed up and he added another joke to it, which I thought was so funny. The joke is, I was at a sports bar. This guy came up to me and he said, "Hey man, what's the score?" I said, "Man, I don't know. What's the game?" And he pushed me. So I shoved him and then I ran, and he chased me down the street. He turned me around. I looked at him. He had on a bandana, a backwards baseball cap, a goatee, a nose ring, an earring, and a piercing in his eyebrow. He said, "Man, you got a lot of nerve." I said, "Man, you got a lot of cranial accessories." And the crowd went nuts. And he goes, "Ha ha, see, you guys are a smart crowd. Last night, I said that joke in front of a stupid crowd. So last night, I had to say, 'Man, you got a lot of crap on your face.'" It was so dumb. So dumb.
No, but so good.
I wanted to tell you, I didn't get a chance to get to how I ended up on Family Guy. I never auditioned for Family Guy. By the way, you'll hear about this when you come out to Bolingbrook this weekend for comedy shows.
Yes.
At cgscomedyclub.com. CGs. And I was contacted by the casting director who found me on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And she said, "My name's Linda. I'm the casting director for Family Guy and American Dad. And we'd like to offer you a job if you're available." I was sitting in a Long John Silver's when she called me. I said, "I am so available right now. Whatever you need. I'm just trying to get some hush puppies." So she, what she needed was, she said, "I want you to do an Al Pacino voice for me. We just need Al Pacino for one segment of one episode of a Family Guy episode." And I said, "Yeah, whatever you need." And she said, "You know, if you want, we can either talk to you on an ISDN line in New York," where I was living at the time.
Very high quality broadcast line.
"Or if you can be in Los Angeles, you'll be working with Seth MacFarlane in the studio." And I said, "I would love to go." I go in to work with Seth MacFarlane. And have you, John, ever gotten so excited to meet someone that you overshot a little bit? Did you, like, you might have scared off somebody?
You mean because of my behavior?
Because you're such a fan. Because you're a fan. Have you ever, in all the years of interviewing people, have you ever been so excited to meet someone that you...
Yeah, I think so. It wasn't too much, but it was a bit in the beginning. It's John Travolta, but...
Get out of here!
It calmed down over the years.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, I would have freaked out about John Travolta. So it was... I overshot big time with Seth MacFarlane. And I could tell he was trying to calm me down when I walked in.
Right.
Every time he'd make a joke, I'd go... And he'd go, "Relax. Just calm down." He goes, "Come on, let's get to the microphone. We'll bang this out in a minute." He's running the board. And
really?
I'm at a microphone. And he kept doing one line as Peter Griffin, the character, where he kept saying, "This is crazier than when Al Pacino was a slumlord laundromat tenant." And then they cut to me as Al Pacino, surrounded by a bunch of broken down washers and dryers, going, "You're out of order. And you're out of order. And you're all out of order." And I did that three times, and Seth MacFarlane goes, "All right, buddy, I think we're good." But I'm so nervous because I think in my mind, we're going to be friends now.
What's now? We're going to dinner?
Hey, I stood up and I said, "Hey, so you want to hang out?" And he goes, what do you mean hang out? I go, I don't even grab a coffee or something. And he goes, "I got to work." And I said, "All right, you want me to leave?" He goes, "Yeah, get the hell out of here." I grabbed my script. I walked out. I didn't hear from Linda again for like 6 months. And then she started calling and saying, "Hey, Craig, can you do this voice or can you do this?" And everything she threw at me, I said, "Whatever you need, I can do any voice you want." And every time I've gone back to record, Seth MacFarlane is never around. It's always this guy, Mike Henry, who does the voice of Cleveland and the creepy old guy. And every time I see Mike, I'll go, "Hey, Mike, is... Seth around?" And every time I see him, he goes, "Don't worry about Seth. We're going to get you out of here real quick. Get out of here."
Hello, I'm in Hollywood. This is show business.
The one person who I do an impression of, though, that really went sideways on me, I do an impression of Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Now, wait a minute. I don't even know what Gene Simmons from Kiss sounds like.
Oh, I could teach you how to do it. All you have to do is watch Benjamin Netanyahu. It's the same voice.
Hi, this is Benjamin Netanyahu from Kiss.
It's the same thing. So, Gene, every time we'd have a music guest in the studio with Howard, I took to, it tickled me to interrupt the music guests as Gene Simmons and try to sell them crappy Kiss products. And and we didn't know it at the time, but the real Gene Simmons started getting hate mail because of all the stuff that I was saying on the air. And it was just an exaggeration of who he is, just selling anything to anybody. And one day our producer came in and said, "Hey guys, we got a problem. So Gene Simmons from Kiss just walked in the building. He wants to beat the crap out of Craig right now." And I said, "He's here?" And he goes, "He's in the building." And I go, "Well, we're not going to let him come upstairs, though, right?" And he goes, "Well, all the security guards are big Kiss fans. I've already let him in without a pass." And I was like, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God." And Howard said, Howard said, Craig, just listen. This is going to be the best show we've ever done. Yeah, and I went, "For who? Not for me."
No, but this is good.
Gene confronts me live on the air, and we go back and forth. The next day, I get a phone call from their management company, McGee Entertainment, and they said, "We just wanted to call you to let you know that our singer, Paul Stanley, is your biggest fan." And I said, "Get out of here." And they said, "No, don't tell anybody this, but Paul Stanley loves when anybody makes fun of Gene Simmons." And I said, "You're kidding." They said, "No, as a matter of fact, he's going to call you. He wants to talk to you about a show idea." And he called me up and asked me if I would like to perform with Kiss. And I said,
"What?
Like stand up? Or you want me to like introduce you?" It was this event called the Kiss Cruise. And he said, "Well, let me ask you a question. How many jokes do you have about Gene?" And I said, "Literally hours." And he said,
"You got the gig."
Now wait, you went on a joke. You went on a Kiss cruise with Kiss,
yes,
and Gene.
Yes. No, John. Not only did
and
I go,
did
oh my
opening
God.
Act jokes about Gene Simmons,
John. Not only do I end up on this boat with Kiss, I ended up upsetting those Kiss fans. They called themselves the Kiss Army. To where the Kiss Army hates me more than Gene Simmons ever did. I meet a girl the first day of the cruise who gets so excited when she meets me. She goes, "Wait a minute. You're Craig. You're the comedian. You're the guy who does the voices with the Family Guy and the..." "Do you want to do a funny announcement on the ship tomorrow morning?" And I went, Oh, yeah. Let me ask you a question. If I make an announcement on the ship, who's going to hear it?" And she said, "If you want, we can flip a switch and it'll get piped into every cabin." And I said, "Flip that switch." The next morning, 3,000 of the biggest Kiss fans in the world at sea woke up to an announcement in their cabin of bing bong.
"Hey everybody, this is Paul Stanley
and this is Gene Simmons from Kiss, and we have a very important announcement. Do not panic, but we have a very important announcement about the Kiss cruise."
At that moment, my friends on the ship said that all the fans stopped in their tracks, were looking at the speakers and smiling. Until the next words out of my mouth,
"We've just hit an iceberg."
Which, keep in mind, when I said we've just hit an iceberg, we're in the middle of the freaking Bahamas.
I knew it.
There's no reason for you as an intelligent person to go, "The ship's going down."
"But do not panic, because Kiss is going to take care of everybody. We actually have three packages to get you off the ship. First, we have the Platinum Package, $5,000. We'll put you in a life raft, and you'll have your own private photo and medical coverage from Kiss. Then we have the Diamond Package. Isn't that right, Paul?"
"That's right, the Diamond Package.
For $10,000, where we throw you in the ocean with Tommy and Eric, and Kiss floats by on a raft. We do a private acoustic show." Everything I said was stupid, but several Kiss fans ran up to the employees and said,
"I'll take one."
So, Kiss is going to charge us to get off the boat?
Yeah.
They believed it.
I knew they would. We got to wrap it up. Give us, once again, who you are, where you're going to be, and how can we get there?
My name's Craig Gass. I'm a stand-up comedian. I do some dirty jokes, but I'm a good person, and I love my mom. I am performing in Bolingbroke this weekend, Friday and Saturday night. CG's Comedy Club, cgscomedyclub.com. CG's Comedy Club in Bolingbroke. We're doing two shows on Friday, three shows on Saturday. Three of the shows are already selling out. Please get your tickets early, and I can't wait to see everybody. I love this city.
Thank you for coming in, no doubt. Bottom of the hour, time to get into the WGN newsroom.